A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 300. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Jim Henson's The Storyteller. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. And yes, 300 episodes, Brian. Woohoo! A remarkable achievement, particularly for yourself, where you've been there for all 300. Some podcasts fade, but you've kept this one going.
Yes, we've made it all these years, and that's almost all of them have been with you as well, Eamon. Yeah, here we are at 300.
And still got plenty to talk about.
Absolutely. And we are, as mentioned, continuing to look at this creation from the Jim Henson Company and the Creature Shop, and Jim Henson himself working on it. And this is a collection, like an anthology show of folktales, European folktales, presented with dramatic elements, with live action actors and Henson style creatures. And we also have the storyteller sitting fireside and telling us these stories, with John Hurt playing the storyteller with a wonderful performance there. And he is telling these stories to us and also to his dog. We have this wonderful talking dog performed by Brian Henson, the son of Jim Henson.
Yes, it's wonderful stuff. Muppets, monsters, folk tales, and the marvelous John Hurt and talking dog combo to deliver it all to us. It's just, it's quite magical, as we'll discover as we carry on.
Absolutely. 9 25-minute episodes, Channel 4, in about 1988.
So, last time we covered four of the stories. We've got five more to rattle through. We're only giving each short story a short amount of time because we want to talk about some of the bits and pieces as well. So let's start with an unusual one, Hans My Hedgehog. I think based on a German folktale, as many of these seem to be, a farmer's wife is desperate for a child and gives birth to a strange baby boy with hedgehog-like spikes on his back. And when this child grows older, he manages to save a king who is lost in a forest. But the king's promise of a reward for Hans the hedgehog backfires when he has to marry his daughter to the strange creature. So you can, even if you're not familiar with the sort of the tale itself, you can see some elements of folklore coming into these stories, Brian.
Yes, and with a lot of these, there are sort of very familiar elements and stylistic things, even though in most cases the stories themselves are not that familiar. The Three Ravens shows us a witch, played wonderfully by Miranda Richardson, enslaving this king, played by Jonathan Pryce. So again, wonderful actors here. And the three sons of this king are turned into ravens. And it's left to a princess to break this spell and turn them back into people by staying silent and not speaking for 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days. And the question is, will she be able to make it that far without speaking?
Yes, another great story with, as you say, a wonderful witch performance by Miranda Richardson as the evil stepmother witch type character.
Yes, for sure.
Sapsorrow is about the princess Sapsorrow, who is as kind and beautiful as her wicked sisters are not. And can she escape her fate, which at times is quite sort of horrible, and yet still go on to marry the handsome prince in a very, this one's very Cinderella-like tale, Brian. You can see elements of Cinderella in this one.
Oh, very much so. And again, with casting, we have Alison Doody as Sapsaro. We remember her from the James Bond films and Indiana Jones films as well.
Yeah, that's right. She's in The Last Crusade and in A View to a Kill, I think.
That's right, yes. And in addition, as the Wicked Sisters, we have Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders. So, you know, some wonderful comic performances there. And then Jeffrey Belden, well-known actor from all sorts of things, as the king.
Yes, Catweasel on television, and the first Doctor in the Doctor Who Unbound series from Big Finish, I think.
Yes, he was actually offered the role of the Doctor before William Hartnell was, and he turned it down and ended up many years later doing an alternate version of the first Doctor for the Big Finish audios.
A neat sort of closing the loop.
Yes, and he did appear in Doctor Who on television as well. The Heartless Giant tells the story of a young prince setting this Heartless Giant of the title free. And while his older brothers go trying to recapture this giant, this young prince Leo has to find the giant's heart and return it to its rightful place in the giant to make him a better and no longer heartless person.
Yes, and if I say that this one features a sort of garden of statues of people who've been transformed to stone, you'll again see how these sort of folklore elements that you're probably familiar with are sort of weaved through these stories.
Oh, yes, and having giants there and so on. There are certainly elements that are quite familiar.
And let's give you one more element that's familiar for our last story in our whistle-stop tour of the nine tales of the storyteller, The True Bride, in which a young girl is kept as a sort of domestic slave by a wicked troll. And she wishes for help with the various impossible tasks the troll sets her. And a magical lion and, I suppose, the inevitable handsome prince save the day.
Yes, absolutely. And that gives us Jane Horrocks as Anya, the girl, and Sean Bean as the prince.
And he doesn't die, Brian.
That's right. This is a rare appearance of Sean Bean not dying.
Yes. Spoilers, but...
Yes, Sean Bean from Game of Thrones, and also one of the James Bond films, GoldenEye, and Lord of the Rings, and many other things. Here he is in this, Alan Armstrong as the voice of the troll, and you also had Michael Kilgariff as the voice of the lion, so classic Cyberman actor there.
Ah, okay, interesting connection. So there we are with our nine tales complete. I've only given you a sort of taste of them. You have to actually sort of see them to experience the wonders, and particularly of John Hurt and the dog's storytelling abilities.
They do pack quite a bit into each 25-minute episode. They're quite dense in terms of story and in terms of things going on.
Yes, this is one of those shows where actually I thought the running times were longer because there seems to be so much going on, but it is only 25 minutes or so.
So there were some spin-offs of this. The Storyteller was a commercial success at the time, and as we mentioned last time, it won some awards as well, and had the well-known thing of being attached to the Jim Henson Company, of course.
Absolutely. So there were books. We know of at least two books to accompany the series. One was a novelization of the tales by Anthony Minghella himself. And there was, perhaps I suppose inevitably, a larger format picture book with the stories and with pictures, stills taken from the TV production. Since this came out in the late 80s, there have been comics and graphic novels continuing to tell tales of folklore in the style of the storyteller, with, of course, the comics introduced by the character of the storyteller himself. And they're, I think, from Archaea Studios Press that you can find those. And I believe some of those are still ongoing, are still some being produced.
Oh, interesting. That sounds like an interesting way to continue this series.
And also, if you go to the website for the Jim Henson's The Storyteller itself, you'll see in the news that earlier this year they released a, I think, a limited edition CD of music from the series by the composer Rachel Portman. I don't know anything more about it than that, but that apparently came out earlier this year. It doesn't seem to be on wide release, unfortunately, but it might be worth going to the website and having a look at that.
Oh, interesting. And one major spin-off, in 1990, there was a series called Jim Henson's The Storyteller, Greek Myths, which did another four episodes, this time with Michael Gambon as the storyteller, taking the place of John Hurt. And once again, Brian Henson played the dog done in a very similar way. And it had in some ways a different feel, with a sort of more Greek setting where the storyteller was with Michael Gambon wearing a toga and so on. But it had a lot of the same kinds of elements with the live action material, and had the dog in very much the same way. And again, it had some very good and well-known actors taking part in the live action segments. In particular, in the Icarus and Daedalus episode, Daedalus is played by Derek Jacobi, which was a wonderful performance there, as you might expect from him. And later on in it, David Morrissey appears as well. So that was quite a neat production and sort of a different way to continue the storyteller.
Absolutely fascinating. Somehow I have failed to come across the storyteller Greek Myths until we did the notes for this, Brian. So I'm going to have to try and track that down and have a look at it, because I've never seen those.
It does have, I believe, a separate DVD release, and then the definitive edition I've been looking at has both. And I'm not sure about Region 2 releases, but I think there is some Region 2 release that does have that. As we said, a number of these releases, unfortunately, are out of print at the moment.
Okay. That might be why it seems to be a bit expensive over here in Region 2 at the moment for the Greek Myths.
Yes. But the books and graphic novels, and one way or another, if you're looking at used things and the like for the TV episodes itself, everything is available out there in one way or another.
Splendid. So you can get to see Jim Henson's The Storyteller. You can get to see the Greek Myths, hopefully, as well. At least I will try to. But what about our review of it, Brian? The good and the bad of these folk tales, as done by the Jim Henson Studios and Creature Shop. How would you like to start us off? What did you particularly enjoy about this series?
Well, there's so much in here, and there's a lot that I enjoyed. I think I have to say that the performance by John Hurt and the chemistry between John Hurt as the storyteller and Brian Henson voicing and puppeteering the dog is wonderful. The two of them on this fairly simple set together are really charming, and it's a really wonderful performance with the two of them there together.
Yes, they almost steal the show, the pair of them, don't they? They are just so good together, and interjecting over the stories, or John Hurt narrating the stories. Yeah, what a, you know, marvellous twinkle in John Hurt's eye. And I wonder if he was unavailable for the Greek Myths, whether, you know, he would have relished a chance, because we know he did want to come back and do more of the storyteller at some point.
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite possible that he was unavailable, because he did so much filming over the years that he was always busy, it seems.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's quite possible. Yeah.
And I suppose while we're talking about acting, we should say that the very impressive cast list, as you said in our last episode, Brian, I guess, you know, all these British TV and film actors who jumped at the chance to be in a Jim Henson creation. And so we have a very, very impressive cast doing great stuff. There's some standouts in there. We've mentioned, I think, Miranda Richardson playing any sort of evil stepmother with witch-like powers. Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders playing the wicked sisters from a Cinderella-type tale. There's some great stuff in there in terms of acting.
Yes, there absolutely is. And these are, you know, a lot of acclaimed actors, but they're also putting in good performances. It's not just the names. They really are good choices, and the performances do what they need to, and they're a lot of them are quite compelling.
What about the creature work itself? You know, obviously, it's what Jim Henson and his company is renowned for. How did you feel about the various different creatures and monsters that we saw on screen?
I think on the whole, they worked well. Some of them are very Jim Henson in style, and some of them a little bit less so. But I was always happy to watch them. I thought they generally look quite good.
Yes, there are some fabulous creations. You know, we've got the sort of the large characters where it's a obviously an actor or a performer in a suit with some sort of exaggerated operated head on top. Then we have some very small, mischievous puppets like the demons that the soldier gambles with in the first episode. There's a very memorable and quite disturbing sequence when the witch transforms the three princes into ravens, which I found that's quite scary stuff, actually, you know, and very well done.
Yes, that's right. I think stylistically they did some very interesting things in how they did the storytelling, where they'd have things like props and objects from the dramatized story itself appearing on the storyteller's poem as well, you know, where suddenly he would be holding the object from that's important to the story and he'd be talking about it. Or the storyteller and the dog would look out towards something and they would see some of what was happening. They also did things like you would have what looks like a drawing, you know, painted on paper or on a wall somewhere that would sort of become animated with the characters of what's happening. So they had all of these little interesting things, making it not just a dramatized thing with a bit of narration, but something that's a little more subtle and a little more complicated than that. And I think those things were really effective.
Yes, that's an interesting one to point out, actually, Brian, because I'm thinking of there's a moment in the story with the troll where he's set the young woman the task of draining a muddy pond. And this gets, obviously, she's covered in mud. And then it switches back and the storyteller walks back to his chair with muddy feet, leaving the dog looking sort of very puzzled at these muddy tracks he's brought in. So, yes, as if he's just stepped back out of his own story to tell us more. Neat touches and very well delivered.
Yes, they have lots of those. And I think they were all well done. They would do things where they would be looking into the fire and they would see some element from the story in the fire as well. So you have all of these sorts of things that make it just a little bit surreal and a little bit more than just someone telling the story and then you see the story.
And of course, we've got this mixture of very sort of typical folkloric elements in these stories. So there are plenty of curses and spells and double crosses, unforeseen consequences for wicked kings, and of course, fortunately, there are happy endings to make it, you know, to reassure the younger audience, I should say. Although some of the, you know, folklore elements, they do get dark along the way, don't they, Brian?
They do sometimes, yeah.
You know, it's one to watch with the young family, but you need to be there with them to reassure them. Unfortunately, I think the dog and John Hurt do that from time to time as well, because their double act, as we keep saying, is so fantastic.
Yeah, and you have moments where the dog will get worried or scared about something, and the storyteller reassures him.
Absolutely, yes. And this was, you know, as I say, I'm pretty sure that this was broadcast on Sundays, or certainly in reruns on a Sunday, because it was one of those Sunday tea time classics. We talked a few episodes ago about the Chronicles of Narnia for the BBC, which I sort of missed at the time, but this was one I did watch with my young family, and we have very happy memories of it, and it was great fun revisiting it again now for this.
Ah, lovely, yes. So is there anything on the negative side that you want to mention on this?
Well, I would give the slight warning that it is, of course, as I say, it does get slightly dark and scary in places, but, you know, there is reassurance to be had by happy endings are coming. I suppose the only issue I have with it, Brian, is, I'll perhaps mention two things. One is that it's puppets, it's Muppets, it's creatures, and it depends what you think about them. You might be enchanted by them. You might be just sort of mesmerized by the creatures from, you know, the history of Sesame Street, the Muppet Show, and then this show, The Storyteller. Or you may find all that rather difficult to watch, particularly the interactions with live actors. So I suppose that is one of the provisos about this show. Do you think that's a problem for people, Muppets and Puppets?
I think it might be in some cases. I think the Jim Henson-style Muppets and puppetry are less of an issue for that and less something that people struggle with than things like Gerry Anderson's Super Marionation. And when you get into the marionettes and things that don't have very much in terms of facial expression and that sort of thing, I certainly know people struggle with that sometimes. But I think while some people may struggle with Henson's Muppets, I think people do less so because they're so expressive.
Yes. And also perhaps because here we have very definitely a sort of fantasy setting. You know, these are sort of meant to be fairy tales with a fairy tale. You know, there are trolls and giants and witches and so on. So, you know, it seems much more acceptable in that context as well, I guess.
And the humans are being played by humans as well. It's the other creatures that are done with Muppets and puppetry.
Yeah. What about yourself? Did you have any reservations about this series?
Not really. It is, in some ways, ever so slightly dated, but that isn't something that that bothers me. The DVD release that I was looking at is from a number of years ago, and I think one that is a little bit newer, a transfer that's a little bit newer, would look better. So I would like to see a more modern release of this, but with the show itself, I can't complain about it. I think it was really well done.
Okay. You've mentioned my other point, which has sort of occurred to me as we were watching and talking about it, was that although you can tell it was shot on film, the transfer does look a little bit sort of dated, and as you say, it might be very interesting to see what a high definition version looks like these days. It might look even better.
I think it could look very good, and I would love to see that, but who knows, maybe you will get it at some point.
And if you were going to point our listeners to just one episode to sort of start with and whet their appetite, bearing in mind that they were sort of broadcast in no particular order around the world, do you have a favourite episode?
I think for me it has to be A Story Short, which is the one that involves the storyteller sort of mingling into his own story. I really enjoyed that.
Yes, I think that's a fabulous story. The way it, you know, he's woven into his own tale is great. So that one is great. And as I say, our family favourite is the Luck Child with the, I think it's a griffin is the big dragon creature that he has to steal a golden feather from. So we rather enjoyed that. But yes, the A Story Short, The Luck Child, but there's some great stuff in all of these stories.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And as I say, it was fascinating to me how many elements of folklore that you'll sort of say, oh, that's very familiar from such and such a tale and so on, that seem to be woven in. You know, there's common themes, I guess, in folklore that recur time and time again.
Yes, absolutely. So I think we should get on to our recommendations. People might be able to guess which way we'll go with this. Do you want to start, Eamon?
Yeah, I think our listeners probably know that we've both had a great deal of fun watching Jim Henson's The Storyteller, and it's going to be a definite recommendation from me. I would say that, you know, in the absence of a Blu-ray, then I would look out here in Region 2 for that £19 Jim Henson collection, which gives you the Dark Crystal Labyrinth and all 9 episodes of The Storyteller. But it's fantastic stuff. If you've got a young family, sit down with them and enjoy these wonderful fairy tales, and particularly that double act at the heart of it between the storyteller and the dog, which is just magical. So yeah, it's a recommendation from me, and I guess, Brian, it's going to be...
It's a recommendation from me as well. It's wonderful stuff, well worth watching. The Greek myths, which I also watched, I would say are also worth watching. My first choice is definitely the storyteller itself over the Greek myths version, but both are good. So yeah, definitely a recommendation for this from me.
Fabulous stuff. Over 300 episodes, we've had the odd show where it's been quite a struggle to get through, but not here. This one, Brian, this one's a very solid, fantastic show that we've been looking at.
Yes, this was, every episode was enjoyable to watch for sure.
Great stuff.
So, in summary, Jim Henson's The Storyteller brought us the storyteller, who was this older gentleman who had his pet dog, talking dog, in the Jim Henson style. And the storyteller would bring us stories from different types of European folklore, which we would see in dramatized form with some well-known and very good actors involved. And each episode would bring us through a complete story and bring us some nice interactions between the storyteller and his dog, and would wrap it up in this nice little 25-minute episode each time.
Fabulous stuff from a fabulous creator, and neatly summarized, Brian.
Okay, so what about next time?
So next time, it's our Halloween special. Every October, we try and come up with a spooky show to watch. And it's one that actually I'm quite interested in getting into some of the background about. This is a dramatic retelling of one of Britain's most notorious haunted house cases. This is the Enfield Haunting from 2015. And there's some interesting stuff. You know, the events behind this have influenced more than one show that we've talked about on British Invaders, but we'll get into that more next time.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where the events have influenced some of the other shows we've talked about, and those shows have influenced this TV production we'll be talking about. So definitely some interesting stuff to talk about next time. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group. And please come and tell us what you thought about Jim Henson's The Storyteller and what your memories are from that. And it will be lovely to talk about that and everything else as well.
Absolutely. Or join us at the Voice of Geeks network of internet radio shows, all various geek-related shows going out at vognetwork.com, where you'll find British Invaders on a Monday and a Tuesday. And if you're listening to us there, hello from Brian and Eamon.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And it's Eamon in England saying, please save us both a seat by the fireside. We'll be back for 301.